Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Prisk and delighted to have you join us in a conversation today with woman peacemaker at the Institute for Peace and Justice at the University of San Diego, Masarat Kadim from Pakistan. Masarat, welcome to our conversation.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Are you enjoying your time as a peacemaker at the Institute?
Yes, great. And it's great to be here and really enjoying it.
Wonderful. And we know that you're here with a woman from the United States, a Native American woman, another woman from from Pakistan, and from Israel.
And South Sudan.
And South Sudan. And yes. You are here from Pakistan. Yeah. So I want to get straight to your story because you have a very significant story. You're a co-founder of Paiman, the Alumni Trust in Pakistan. So what was and is your motivation for founding this organization?
I actually started my career as a university teacher. And after teaching there for 13 years, I just found, and when I go out in the field, I found that, of course, my knowledge and my work with the university students is restricted to only the students of the university. I think I need to go out and work for the people, especially for the women and the youth who are being marginalized, who are impoverished, who need actually the support and assistance to be empowered so that they can find an alternative in their lives and become active citizens of Pakistan. So that actually was my motivation to come out of the very comfort zone of the university, mm-hmm. and of course come into the field, which is very difficult, very challenging. And we established Paiman Trust because the slogan of Paiman is linking communities to opportunities.
Mm. Very powerful, very powerful statement. I also understand that it's quite a pioneer organization, and it was founded to prevent and counter violent extremism, for which you have an acronym, the P/CVE, in Pakistan. So could you talk to us about how do you prevent or counter extremism? How do you neutralize it and any of the tendencies in extremism?
I would just say Paiman, of course, was established before the violent extremism became the order of the day in some parts of Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And that is the area that I belong to. It is called Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and erstwhile FATA, Federally Administered Tribal Area, which is now being merged with Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, the area that borders Afghanistan. So this was, every now and then we would just hear the violent extremist, tendencies are becoming more rampant. The people are, blowing up themselves. And there were incidents of, bomb blast and explosion in the public places and killing, innocent people. So that was the time that we realized that we really need to be engaged in the communities which are hard hit by violent extremism. And at the same time, there are people from the same community who are involved in these heinous, the crimes that they were committing. So the process itself is very difficult. People always, I'm just going to give you people think that a person becomes a violent extremist or a radical because of poverty and lack of opportunities. Mm-hmm. My experience with working with the individuals, radical and extremist individual and community, is that there is no single path to radicalization leading to violent extremism or terrorism.
Very interesting.
Every case that we have handled of a radical youth actually is a unique combination of personal trajectory, his or her personal psychology, mm-hmm. and of course the conducive environment that helps them in becoming radical or extremist. Mm-hmm. In the case of Pakistan, unfortunately, there were many forces. They came together, they provided them the enabling environment, and at the same time, I believe there had been a radicalizer or instigator who usually is the outsider and sometimes the insider, mm-hmm. who actually helps them in believing those conspirational theories. The people don't actually challenge them because they believe that this is, the belief system, so they don't challenge the misinterpretation and the selected text of the Quran without the context. And that actually was the main cause of the people to adopt and practice the way that is not the Islamic way. That is not the way the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam preached and taught to his ummah.
Mm-hmm. So we, many of us in the global community, have a misunderstanding of the roots of extremism. We think that it develops in one direction, but as you've been saying, it's that growth and that need to belong.
There are, of course, naturally in any community and society, there are always some structural weaknesses and gaps. I'm not going to say that our community or society is a perfect, and the state is a perfect state. We do have weak governance structures. We do have lack of opportunities. But I always say 60 years back, the situation remained the same throughout these 60 years. What happened all of a sudden that in 2000 and onwards till today, this violent extremism, the wave of violent extremism has engulfed the whole of Pakistan, particularly my community or the province that I belong to, because there were some people who were interested. I said, the radicalizers are always, they have their own motives. They are not interested in my faith and in my ideology. They have their own ideology, and their ideology is the ideology of power. Their ideology is the ideology of influencing somebody somewhere. And that is actually, I think, they make the people the pawns in their hands, how to actually, and they make the people the puppet, how to operate on them and how to make them the instrument to achieve their goals and objectives. Mm-hmm. So in our case, it was a lot of people, because we have security issues in Pakistan, it's a strategically located country, and mm-hmm. there are the regional power dynamics, and there are Pakistan is being grappling with it for the last, I would say, 30 years now. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think since its existence, because it has at the eastern border a country India, which has never still reconciled with the fact that Pakistan is a sovereign independent country.
Mm-hmm. And that therein lies one of the many challenges. Just staying on that theme of extremism, in 2017, President Trump threatened to cut financial aid to Pakistan. And I know that you've written about this, but I'm interested to know today, what is your response to him about that decision that he attempted to make?
I think I would like President Trump to understand that what we are actually, today, it's because we fought U.S. war. We defeated, the enemy of the U.S., that is the erstwhile Soviet Union, mm-hmm. in the 80s.
Yes.
And I think the whole, I would say he should be thankful that if it had not been the power of the Pakistani state and the people, Soviet Union would have been sitting in Afghanistan. They should realize it, that we became the victims of extremism and terrorism because the U.S. left the Afghanistan in lurch after the Soviet Union, was defeated in Afghanistan. So the money, the dollars, the weapons that were left in the hands of those who had no idea what to do with it now. And all of a sudden, with the 9/11, the Mujahideen who fought your war, it wasn't my war, they became the extremists, they became the Talibans mm-hmm. overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to understand that if it had not been the state of Pakistan and mm-hmm. the people of Pakistan who gave immense sacrifices, both in human and in kind, mm-hmm. I think the world would not have been what it is today. So they should be thankful to the sacrifices that we made for the global peace. And even today we are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
because even today Pakistan is being projected like as the gray state and the dark state, and providing the fodder for the to the extremist groups or to the terrorists. They have to understand the feeling of insecurity that exists even today in the minds of the people of Pakistan, because you don't know when actually somebody would like to use Pakistan as a battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
When there is going to be a new label imposed upon us that Pakistan is a terrorist state. It is because we have been fighting somebody else's war. I think that was our mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I would imagine in the nature of the world and the history of the world, that is a very big mistake and a big request to make of Pakistan. Just shifting the tone a little bit here, I've heard from friends I have in Pakistan that it's a very beautiful country. Can you just give us a brief description of Pakistan? Because I want to get away from the sadness to something more attractive for a moment.
Sure. Of course, Pakistan, I say it's a beautiful, I would say, country, because it has four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It has a landscape which has the mountainous range, one of the second highest mountainous range that is K2 is in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the largest, I think, the largest glacier in the world, which recently the princess and the Duchess and the Duke visited.
That's the Duchess and Duke of Cambridge.
Yes, the Duchess and Duke of Cambridge. Recently, they actually visited the glacier area of Pakistan. And then it has I think it's a very resourceful country, both when it comes to the mineral resources, the natural resources, and the human resource that it has, because it's a thriving country of it's a nation of youth. 60% of the Pakistani actually population is under the age of 35. So it's
60%.
I'm not very accurate about it, but nearly 60% of the population,
mm-hmm,
is youth. And I think that is the one of the resources that we have, and we take pride in it that although it's located in one of the strategic locations on the globe, but at the same time I salute the resilience of my nation, of my state, and my the government who had against all challenges it has come out so successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Although we are still grappling with the situation, but I think it's a beautiful country. One needs to visit it. One needs to see it.
Yes.
And I have to tell you, some of my friends who are the diplomats or who come from outside and they stay there for some time, they said we want to come back. Even after spending 2 or 3 years there, they want to come back because the people are hospitable, the people are,
mm-hmm,
welcoming, the people are peace-loving. And we are all forward-looking people.
That was, you explained that beautifully. Thank you. So you mentioned peacemaking, and I want to think of you, come back to you in your role as a peacemaker, and the other women and men that you work alongside. Are women being more recognized in Pakistan? How is life for a woman in Pakistan?
Let me define it this way. A woman in Pakistan is protected and respected.
Those are two very powerful and positive words.
Yes, and because I think it is a patriarchal society, women have been working in different fields. Women are educated. When you look at our parliament, when you look at our provincial assemblies, we have 17% of women sitting as decision makers, as parliamentarian and members of the provincial assembly in the country. And besides the 17% representation of women over there, they can contest on open seats as well. So that means they can contest with the other men in their constituencies. Having said that, women have been the part of the workforce also. We have the women pilot, we have women in the army, the women have been working in all sectors.
Mm-hmm.
We have very successful women business women. We have exemplary women leaders and teachers, and of course in the social sector also. So that that's, but whenever, like, you know, when people talk about, you know, oh, women in Pakistan, like, you know, are suffering, I asked this question from one of the women that I'm working, and she said, if they feel that my dupatta on my head, that my burqa, like, you know, covering my body, is something that is stopping me from coming out, that is stopping me from working, like, you know, with men, mm-hmm. I think it's in my culture to be covered. It's in my religion to cover myself.
Mm-hmm.
And covering yourself, whether it's in the veil or out of the veil, like, you know, it does not obstruct any woman from working side by side with women. And I think I'll give you my own example. Because I have been working everywhere, like, mm-hmm. with all this, like, you know, the dupatta on my head, not only in Pakistan, but outside also Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody, people have to understand, this is our culture. This is the religion that we have to, of course, practice, mm-hmm. that we have to cover ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives us a sense of identity. It gives us that sense of security and protection.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives it that pride that with all this, like, you know, the cultural value that we uphold, the religion that we practice, we associate ourselves with it. We identify ourselves with it.
That's very good for us to hear, I think, because there are a lot of naysayers about the covering, and we need to understand that it is part of who you are, and that woman inside that clothing is still being extremely effective. It's not stopping her from working. So you've spoken at the UN General Assembly and the Security Council about extremism and violence. You have really been a woman of the world with a lot of your work. Now that you're a peacemaker in residence at the Institute for Peace and Justice in San Diego, will that increase your already substantial influence in your country? Will you take back practices from the learnings that you've had? Or has this just been, as it's supposed to be, a respite and a rest for you from all of the work that you do?
I think both. I mean, it's a nice place to be in to, like, you know, take some rest and reflect on the work that I've been doing and try to document some of it, because in the hustle of our, like, you know, busy schedule, we usually forget that what we have been doing had to be, like, you know, exemplary. I mean, it should be taken an example, and since this type of work we have been doing remains unprecedented in the world, so we really need to share, you know, the best practices from my work, particularly with Pehman in Pakistan. I think, yes, there will be some learning that I would really like to take back from this institute and from my women fellows, that I would like to, of course, share maybe with my own communities, with people in Pakistan, and that might help me in coming up with something which is more strategic, which is more influential, and which is more effective, whether that is a policy document or whether that's a research document.
Mm-hmm. And both are as powerful, I think, equally powerful in two different from two different sources. So unfortunately, Masaret, we're coming to the conclusion of our conversation. So I just wanted to leave the final words to you. I know you've given us some good explanations, but is there anything you'd particularly like to close with that would increase our understanding of Pakistan? Because we see your country on the news, we think we know and understand, and we don't. And of course, now we have all the troubles in Syria, which, you know, are away from you, but I know that they're all part of that Middle Eastern conflagration. So what would you like to leave us with?
I would like to actually, you know, leave you with this thinking that please, whenever you look at a country like Pakistan, try to put on the lens that can actually help you in understand the geographic location,
mm-hmm.
its security dynamics,
mm-hmm.
the ideology, the culture of the people, that will definitely change your perspective vis-a-vis Pakistan. And you have to actually understand that it has been a country, I mean, it's a country of very resilient nations,
mm-hmm.
nation, and it's a country which has actually been unnecessarily projected as a terrorist state.
Mm-hmm.
This was imposed on us.
Mm-hmm.
We are still fighting it.
Mm-hmm.
And please try to be cognizant of the fact that the people of Pakistan are human beings. Mm-hmm. Our blood is as expensive. It is as, like, you know, dear to us as of any other human being. And that has to be recognized by the people and by the states. And one really last thing that I want to leave here is that my sisters in Kashmir, the people of Kashmir, are also human beings. Mm-hmm. Their suffering needs to be actually recognized by the people. And I making an appeal to all the human beings in the world. I'm talking of the, in inverted commas, the human beings. Mm-hmm. To please listen to the cry of the women and youth of Kashmir. On a daily basis, they are being raped, they are being killed, they are being tortured. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And on that very empowering note, but also a very tragic note, we thank you, Musarrat Qadeem of Pakistan, for joining us on iVow today.
Thank you so much. It was lovely talking to you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak out from my heart.
Thank you.